Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. We are starting at the top Mishnah on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We are in the 15th parak of Masechet Shabbos. We are discussing the Malacha of Kosher. Through the first two Mishnayos of our parak, which was on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, we noted that there are three levels for tying on Shabbos. One is the Malacha de Oraisa of Kosher, and that is when you make a permanent knot. Two is the Isser de Rabbanon of Kosher, and that is if you're making the knot not indefinitely, but for an extended period of time. And number three, where it's Mutar Lagamri, where you plan on tying it and untying it within a 24-hour period. Presentation of these three levels is the way Rashi presents it, both in the Mishnayos and in the Gemara as well. The Rambam has a slightly different presentation. We went over the Shitas Rambam already a couple of times. In the meantime, however, we're going to continue right now. We're going to start with the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph as the Mishnah has continued discussing the Malacha of Kosher. Mishnah starts off, Kosher Dali Bipiskaya. A person can tie the bucket to a belt, some sort of girdle. Avalo Bechevel, but not using a rope. We're discussing a case over here where a person wants access to the water at the bottom of the well. He's got a bucket. Normally it's tied to the side of the well, but for whatever reason, it's no longer tied, and he wants to tie it on Shabbos. Mishnah gives an allowance that one is allowed to tie it with a belt, using a belt, but not using a rope. Rabbi Yehuda matir, and Rabbi Yehuda allows even with the tying of a rope. The Gemara is going to explain the machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. What seems to be going on over here in the Mishnah, according to the Tanakhama, is the following. Tanakhama only allows you to tie it with a belt because we know that the belt is something that you're going to need back quickly. You know that when you tie the belt to the bucket, you know you're going to untie it within the next 24 hours, and therefore, it will not be a kesher shel kayama. It will not be a long-standing knot, and therefore it's going to be permitted. Using a rope, on the other hand, you run the risk of leaving it there. That would be a kesher shel kayama, and that's why you're not allowed to leave it. That would be the position of the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda, on the other hand, allows it, and the Gemara will ask the question, under what basis would Rav Yehuda allow you tying a rope when in fact there is the risk of you leaving the knot over there, making it a permanent lot, and therefore it would be aser. The Gemara is going to discuss. Then the Mishnah says, Klal Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says the following rule, Kol Kesher Sheino Shel Kayama, Ein Chayavin Alav. Any knot that is not a permanent knot, a person is not going to be liable for. Okay, it's a lot of double negatives and a lot of usages of the word knot in different spellings. So let's say it in the positive. The positive is that if it is in fact a permanent knot, so then one would be violating the Issur Daraisa of Kosher. Now this statement of Rabbi Yehuda seems to be pretty straightforward, and it seems to be pretty much what we know already. And the real issue is Rabbi Yehuda is addressing what? Now if Rabbi Yehuda is addressing the opinion that he just espoused, that's a little bit difficult. Because Rabbi Yehuda just espoused an opinion in the Mishnah that one is allowed to tie the bucket to the rope, and that would be Mutar Lagamrei. Okay, now let's see if Rabbi Yehuda's next statement can fit in. Rabbi Yehuda then says that if the knot that you're making is not a permanent knot, then you're not going to be liable. It's kind of hard fit. That last statement of Rabbi Yehuda would seem to indicate that even if it is not intended to be a permanent knot, but you're making a knot, it would certainly be an Issur D'Rabbanan. That would be the implication of that line. And meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda just got done saying that's Mutar Lagamrei to go ahead and tie the rope to the bucket. Probably the better way to say it, or the an easier way to say it would be that Rav Yehuda here in the Mishnah is not addressing the comment regarding the bucket, but rather is going back to the very first Mishnah of the Perek. If you go back to the first Mishnah of the Perek, so we had also a general statement made by Rabbi Meir, not by Rabbi Yehuda. If you look back at the first Mishnah, Rabbi Meir Omer Kol Kesheshu Yachol Latir Bachas Miadav Ein Chayav Nalav. Very similar structure. Rabbi Meir says that anytime you make a knot where you can untie it with one hand, you're not going to be chayav. So what Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda seem to be doing is giving these broader definitions of what is the very definition of kosher. Rabbi Meir talks about the ease in which one can untie it. If it's an easy knot that one can untie, so that is not going to carry with it a liability. Rabbi Yehuda says it has nothing to do with the ease of untying it. Rabbi Yehuda says it's an issue of duration. If you're going to be making it as a permanent knot, it's going to be chayav. And if it's not going to be a permanent knot, you're not going to be chayav. So it could very well be that Rabbi Yehuda is going back to Rabbi Meir and is arguing with the general definition of what is kosher. Then, of course, it only begs the question, why isn't Rabbi Yehuda's statement coming right after Rabbi Meir's statement? So admittedly, that's an issue, and I don't have a clear response to that. But presumably that would be the easier way to read the Mishnah. Admittedly, it's a choppy way to read the Mishnah, but it's easier. Chevel Damai. We're starting with the Gemara. We are on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. And we are right after the Mishnah. So the Gemara wants to know, no, what kind of rope are we talking about? E lema chevel dama. If we're talking about just a generic rope, Rabbi Yehuda Mati or Keshel Shekayamahu. So the Gemara says, and of course it makes no sense. Because Rabbi Yehuda gives an allowance to go ahead and tie the bucket to the rope. But of course, if the knot that we're talking about is a permanent knot, so then Rabbi Yehuda would be not permitting it. In fact, it would be Nisa Daraisa, as Rabbi Yehuda himself expresses in the very Mishnah. So that can't possibly be. Ela chevel degargi. So we're talking about a weaver's rope. Now, a weaver's rope, as Rashi explains over here, is a rope used by the weaver. I know that wasn't so profound, but it is a rope used by the weaver. And that means to say that the weaver needs his rope. And so really what you're doing is you're just borrowing it because the weaver is going to ask for it back. Now, of course, on Shabbos, he's not going to need it back because he's not going to be doing any weaving on Shabbos. But still, the idea is that you know that you are going to be tying the bucket to this weaver's rope, but you also know that you're going to be untying it because you're going to have to give it back to the weaver. So the Gemara says that's now the case of our Mishnah. And Lamemra de Rabban and Sabri Gazrina Chevel de Gardi Atu Chevel de Alma Rabbi Yehuda Sabri Lo Gazrina. And so now the Gemara says, let's lay out the Machlokas. Here is the debate between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Now, both are of the opinion that, look, we know that it's a weaver's belt and a weaver's rope, and we know that you're going to untie it within the next 24 hours. It just happens to be that the Chachamim are of the opinion that once you get comfortable with this idea of tying a rope to the bucket, so then we'll have a Gzeira. The Chachamim established a Gzeira. Once you get comfortable tying one type of rope, you're going to be using other types of rope as well, and you're going to end up making a permanent knot, which is an Issa D'Oraisa. And Rav Yehuda says, no, there's no gzera to be made. In other words, everyone can see the difference between a weaver's rope and a regular rope, and the allowance over here is only for a weaver's rope, and with the understanding that you're going to untie it within 24 hours, and there's no room to make a gzera. And there's no need to make a gzera. So that's the machlok. It's between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda. V'rimenu the Gemara says, but the problem is that we do have a braisa, and this braisa is going to be problematic on two counts. Let's learn the braisa first. Chevel delisha nifsak, if you have the rope or the bucket that broke, lo yei kosher ela onvo. According to the Tanakhama, you can't tie it, but the only thing you could do is make a bow. Rav Yehuda omer korech alav punda upiskaya uvavach lo yad menu. Rav Yehuda says that what you could do is you could tie it with some sort of belt. The punda is a hollow money belt. Or piskaya, like the girdle that we've been describing in the Mishnah. Uvavach lo yad menu, but you can't make a bow. Now the Gemara assumes over here that we have a two-pronged problem. Kashi de Rav Yehuda, de Rav Yehuda, kashi de Rabbanan, de Rabbanan. Because the positions of Rav Yehuda in the Braisa seems to be going against the Rav Yehuda of our Mishnah, and the position of the Chachamim in the Braisa seem to be going against the position of the Chachamim in the Mishnah. And the Gemara goes in response, the Rabban lo kasha, cheva b'cheva mechlef, aniva b'kshir lo mechlefe. Look, the Chachamim are interested in making a gzera. In fact, they do make a gzera. But if we're talking about the confusion between one type of rope and another type of rope, they feel that in such a scenario, it's apt to make a gzera. But if the issue is a confusion of tying a knot versus making a bow, no one's going to confuse a knot and a bow. So yes, the Chachamim are interested in making a gzera, but only because of the confusion of ropes, but not that people are going to confuse a knot and a bow. And Rav Yehuda lokasha, hasam lo mishum de michlefe aniva b'kshira, ela aniva gufa k'shirahim. Now, it's true that according to Rav Yehuda is not interested in making a gzera, and you're not going to confuse different types of ropes. You use the girdle, you use the hollow belt, and that would be fine, and you're not going to confuse it with a regular belt. And the reason why Rav Yehuda prohibits a bow is not because of Gzera, but because Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that making a bow in of itself is an Isser of kosher. And, if I can add, it also conforms with what we learned in the Mishnah, because if you look at that last line in the Mishnah, the Rav Yehuda says, Kol kesher she'eino shel kayama in chayav nalav. Any knot that is not permanent, a person is not going to be chayav. Again, let's just now move that into the positive. That means that all knots that are permanent, a person is going to be chayav. Now, let's accentuate. All knots, meaning as long as you are making some sort of connective bow that is going to connect two things, that's going to hold something together, so then you're going to be chayav as long as it's permanent. And so presumably that means even the aniva, even a bow. As long as the bow is planned to be kept there for some time, you're going to be chayav for that as well. And so, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda of the Braisa, who disallows an aniva, it's not because of a gzera, it's because an aniva, as long as you plan on leaving it there, is going to be a knot in which one is going to be chayav over. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav. Continuing now in the Gemara, we are four wide lines down. Maybe Adam Chava Mitoch Beisav Kosher Vepara Uve Evos. An allowance is given by Rav that if a person needs to, he can now take a rope and tie the feed bag to the neck of the animal. That means to say that you want to feed your animals, so you feed your animals on Shabbos and Yontif if the animal is reliant upon you for eating. And in doing so, you want to basically tie the feed bag to the neck of the animal. So you're going to tie it now on two locations, on two ends. You're going to tie one end to the animal, let's say the animal has a collar on it. So you tie one to the neck of the animal, and the other one you tie to the feed bag. And now the feed bag is being held in place, and okay, good. And so he allows you to do so. And the Gemara says, now how is this allowed? Eisvei Rabbi Acha Richa Duhu Rabbi Acha Bar Papa Le Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Acha, who happens to also go by the name of Rabbi Acha the Tall, who also is Rabbi Acha Bar Papa, asked the following question to Rabbi Abba. Chevesha be'evus kosher be'para, ushe be'para kosher be'evus, uvovad shelo yavi chevel mitok beso v'ikshor be'para uve'evus. Here in the Braisa, the Braisa says that if you're just tying one side, meaning one rope is already tied, one side of the rope is already tied to the feed bag, and you just want to tie it to the neck of the animal, that's fine. Or if one side of the rope is already tied to the neck of the animal and you want to tie the other side to the feed bag, that's fine. But you cannot tie both on Shabbos. So this obviously goes against the allowance that was just given by Rav. Ha'asam chavada ama, ha'cha chavada gardi. So the Gemara says we're talking about different types of ropes. If we're talking about the weaver's rope, so then you could tie even both sides. Because if you're doing the weaver's rope, so then again, no one's going to be confusing the weaver's rope and regular rope, right? Presumably the Gemara is assuming that this is going like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. No one's going to confuse the two. And you know with the weaver's rope, you're going to be undoing it within the next 24 hours because you got to give it back to the weaver. And so therefore, you could tie both sides. On the other hand, the Braisa that only allows you to tie one side, so that's only talking about a regular rope. Okay. The answer the Gemara just gave is admittedly a little bit difficult because as long as we're saying the Braisa is talking about a regular rope, but there still is an allowance in the Braisa that as long as the rope is tied to the feed bag, you can tie it to the neck of the animal. And as long as the rope is tied to the neck of the animal, you can tie it to the feed bag. But if it's a regular rope, so don't we run the risk of leaving it there intact and thereby creating a permanent knot? And so it's a little bit difficult to understand how exactly this answers up for the Braisa. Certainly you understand the side that it answers up for Rav because it's talking about a weaver's rope. But the part of the Braisa that's talking about a regular rope still doesn't fully explain how that explains the Braisa. Continuing the Gemara, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Meshmul Kli Kavai Motel Atatam Shabbos. We move on to the topic of Muksa. We talked about the weaver's rope. So as Rashi points out over here, so we are going to segue into a discussion regarding whether or not the equipment of the weaver is going to be Muksa. One more time, this Masechet, we're going to go into the loom and we're going to take a look at the loom together. Admittedly, my working knowledge of the loom is very limited. And as a result of that, I will not be super specific or descriptive in terms of describing these items in the looms. Yes, I've looked at pictures, and yes, I try to make sense of it all. But admittedly, this is something for me which is purely academic. And so I'll just simply, right now, try my best. So the instruments of the weaver, Mutal Tatam Shabbos, one is allowed to move them on Shabbos. Now, you have to ask the obvious question, and that is, why isn't it Muksa? So an important Rashi over here, Rashi writes the following, Mutal Tatam, Rashi is a little bit above where we are in the Gemara. He writes, L'shnei Akanim L'tashmish Acher. So the two beams that are used in the loom, you're tying the vertical strings from one beam to another beam, and now you want to take these beams on Shabbos, obviously you're not weaving with it, obviously that's a Malacha. You're just taking these beams and you're using for them for other activities on Shabbos. So it would be fine. Rashi goes on, Ve'ashmina de'ein gardi makpid aleihem. The weaver is not that particular about the beams themselves, meaning that obviously he likes using the beams for weaving, but he'd be just as happy if the beams were used for other activities as well, other utilities. Rashi then goes on to write, Ve'lo havi melechtan le'isser. And therefore, it is not designated as a klisha melechta le'isser. That means to say that what Rashi is teaching us is that if it was used specifically for the act of weaving, so then it's a klisha melechta le'isser. And so then, obviously, it would be muksa. Now, under certain circumstances, you can move a klisha melechta le'isser, as we're going to be learning later in the Maseches. But in the meantime, however, it still has the status of muksa if it were exclusively or primarily designed for the use of an act which is prohibited on Shabbos. However, as Rashi explains over here, these beams that are the weaver uses for his weaving, so they are used for other activities as well, other utilities as well. And so therefore, it does not have a designation of being a kli shemalachta liser, and therefore, explains Rashi, that's why it's not muksa. Back to the Gemara. Bami name Rav Yehuda, kovet elyon, v'kovet atachton mahu. So they asked the following question from Rav Yehuda. The upper beam, the lower beam, these are the two beams that are used for the loom. So what is their status vis-a-vis muksa? So in v'lav v'rafia b'yadei. So Rav Yehuda was asked a question. Sometimes he said yes, sometimes he said no. It was weak in his hand. He didn't have a clear answer. Edmar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Kli Kavai Mutal Atatal M'Shabbos. Rav Nachman quotes the name of Shmuel that the instruments, the equipment used by the weaver is allowed to, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Afilu Kovet Elyon Va Kovet Tachton, even the upper beam, the lower beam. Avalos Amudim, but not the Amudim. The Amudim are what is inserted into the ground, meaning that some looms are actually grounded, meaning they have pegs on the bottom that are actually inserted into the ground. And what the Gemara is saying is that the only thing you cannot do on Shabbos is you cannot pick up these pegs that are inserted into the ground. You can't pick them up from the ground. The Gemara wants clarification on this last point. Amalei Rav LeRav Nachman Mishnah Amudim Delo. Why can't I pick the pegs up from the ground? Ilema Dekavi Gumos. So the Gemara says maybe it is because you made a hole. The Gemara says that's not true. You didn't make a hole. The hole was already there. Gumos mi mela kahavyan. Obviously, if the peg is in the ground, that means that the hole is already there. All you're doing by picking it up is just simply uncovering the hole, but you're not making a hole. Didnan, the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah, Hataman Lepis Vitsonas Tachas Hagefen. If one were to take these different types of roots, Lepis is a radish, Nonos, another type of radish, and you want to put it in a vineyard. Now, just as a quick introduction, we've made this point before. Back in the good old days, obviously without refrigeration, so your vegetables were extraordinarily perishable. And so therefore, how do you keep them around for just a little bit longer? So the best way to preserve them is to put them in the ground. And the ground will, to the best of its ability, serve as a preservative. So you're not putting it in the ground because you want to replant it, you're just putting it in the ground simply as a preservative. And the Mishnah over here teaches us that if you do this, so then you don't have to worry about any of the planting halachas. And the Mishnah goes on to say, im miksas alav megulim, if the leaves are still exposed, meaning I can pull these roots out by the leaves are above ground. So ein choshesh lo mishum klaim v'lo mishum shvius v'lo mishum meiser. So there is no concern, not for the halachas of klaim, meaning you didn't violate the issur of klaim because you didn't plant this in the ground. You're just using the ground right now as a holder to hold it there. Neither are you in violation of shvius if you plant it in the ground because you're not planting it in the ground. Again, you're just putting in the ground for the ground to hold it. And the same thing is true with meiser, meaning that even if there is new growth, we're not saying now that it was planted and the ground caused the new growth. You're just holding it in the ground simply as a preservative. So in all those scenarios, it is it avoids all the agricultural halachas. V'nitalim b'shabbos. And on top of that, and the reason why we're quoting this Mishnah is because of these last two words, is that on Shabbos, what you can do is you can pull them out of the ground. Now, that's why, by the way, the Mishnah mentions that the leaves are above the ground, so that means to say that you don't actually have to physically touch the dirt in order to pull them out of the ground. You just simply grab it by the leaves and you pull it out of the ground. The fact that you are going to be moving, you're going to be displacing some dirt, that is tiltum menatzad, that is mutter. And so, what the Mishnah in Kalim just taught us is that you're allowed to pick them up off from the ground. Aren't you making a hole? And the answer, of course, is no, you're not making a hole. All you're doing is just exposing a hole that was already there. And so the Gemara says, so now that we learned that Mishnah and Kalayim, so can we apply the same idea regarding the pegs of the loom that are in the ground? So why not pick it up off from the ground? You're not making a hole, you're just simply exposing a hole. So the Gemara makes the following distinction. The distinction is as follows. In the case in Kalayim, so the vegetables, the root vegetables were outside in the field. So if now after you pull them out from the ground, there's a little hole in the field, that's not going to bother you whatsoever. On the other hand, the looms where the pegs are in the ground, where's the loom right now? The loom's in your house. When you pick it up and you expose those holes, so those holes in your house are extraordinarily seemly, and you're going to be very tempted to now go ahead and fill in those holes, and you may come to fill the holes, which is would be a malacha of binyan, of bonet. Continuing the Gemara, Bami Rav Yochum, Rav Yehuda, Bar Levi. Following question was asked from Rabbi Yehuda Bar Elai, Kli Kavai, Kegon, Kovad Elyon, Kovad Tachton, Mal Tachton, Meshabbos. Now, this is a repeat of the question that we've already asked, but over here there are different principles involved in who's asking the question, who the question is being asked from. Rabbi Yochanan now here is asking the question from Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi, but it is the same question, and that is using the equipment of the loom. Is that a muksa? Is that going to be a violation of muksa? Amalei emetaltalin. So here the answer is you're not allowed to move it. Now that, of course, goes against all the other answers that we've already expressed. Well, the first answer was in v'lav v'rafi b'yadei. I don't know. But then the Gemara cited other Amoraim who gave the answer as being a very clear yes, meaning it's you can move it, it's not muksa. Here, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Levi's answer to Rabbi Yochanan is that it is muksa, matam lefisha ein nitala. And the reason why is because it's not moved. And the way Rashi understands it is that during the week, it was way too heavy, and it was basically designated for the weaving process. It's a kli shemalachto le'isser, and so therefore it is muksa. So the Gemara gives a various number of responses to whether or not the equipment used by the weaver is in fact muksa or is it not muksa, and the Gemara gave a range of answers to this question. Continuing now in the Mishnah, we're on the second Mishnah on the Amud, on Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, Mekaplim es hakelim. One is allowed to fold up clothing. Folding up clothing presents itself two basic issues. The Mishnah is going to be really focused on one issue, and the Gemara is going to be focused with the other issue. The one issue is that you're folding up the clothing on Shabbos. That means to say that you wore the clothing on Shabbos, and now you're putting them away. So you're folding them and preparing them for what? So presumably for the weekday. And that would be a hachana issue. You are now preparing from Shabbos to a weekday. That's one issue, which is really what the Mishnah is primarily focused on. And then there's another issue as well, and that is the folding of the clothing is also going to serve as a tikkun. It's also going to be a way of preserving the clothing, restoring the clothing, making sure that it does not have any creases or folds in the clothing. And that would be a subcategory of tikkun mana. You are fixing the clothing, so to say. Exactly which malacha to put that under. Make bepatish, I say that, but with reservation. Whatever it is, let's keep it nice and simple. Let's just simply say it's tikkun mana. You are fixing the clothing, and therefore, it is going to be a violation of Shabbos. That's another issue, but we're only going to discuss that when we get to the Gemara. So right now, in the Mishnah, let's just focus on the issue of Hachana. The Mishnah says, Mekapam Zakim, one is allowed to fold the clothing, afilu arba v'chamisha pamim, and even four or five times on Shabbos. It just simply means as many times as necessary. And that is under the circumstance where you plan it wearing it again on Shabbos. Rashi writes, afilu dalva he pamim, kidei lachzor lulav sham, bo bayom. As long as you plan wearing it again on the Shabbos, so then it would not be a violation of being mechin from Shabbos to Chol, because obviously you plan on wearing it again on Shabbos. Similarly, umitzian es hamitos milele Shabbos or Shabbos. One is allowed to make the beds from Friday night for Shabbos, meaning if one plans on using the bed again on Shabbos, so then making the bed would not be an issue of preparing from Shabbos to the weekday, because you plan on using the bed again on Shabbos. Avalomi Shabbos to Motzei Shabbos. But one is not allowed to use a bed from Shabbos to Motzei Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Mekapa Mesakelim Matzina Samitos Miyama Kippurim LeShabbos. Rabbi Shmuel says that one is allowed to fold the clothing and to make the bed from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that there would be no issue of Achana preparing from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. Obviously, Yom Kippur over here is coming out on a Friday, and in just a moment, I'm going to at least attempt to address the idea that Yom Kippur is coming out on a Friday. But in the event that Yom Kippur comes out on a Friday, so then according to Rabbi Shmuel, there would be no problem with folding clothing from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. V'chavei Shabbos kraven b'Yom Kippurim. Aval lo shel Yom Kippurim b'Shabbos. And the chalavim, the fats of the karbanos that are offered on Shabbos, can in fact be offered on Yom Kippur, but not in the other direction. But the chalavim of Yom Kippur, the fats of Yom Kippur, meaning of the karbanos of Yom Kippur, cannot be burned on Shabbos. The Gemara is going to spend time in tomorrow's daf discussing this in more detail, so we're going to wait for tomorrow's daf for a further discussion on the shita of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Kiva Omer lo shel Shabbos kriven b'Yom Kippurim v'lo shel Yom Kippurim kriven b'Shabbos. And Rabbi Kiva says in neither direction. You can't burn the Shabbos chalavim on Yom Kippur. Neither can you burn the Yom Kippur chalavim on Shabbos. I'll mention it briefly. The Mishnah over here is assuming that Yom Kippur can fall out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. And so therefore, the discussion that we just saw together amongst the Tanaim is how do we handle the fats of Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur Karbanos, if it comes out on a Friday, what do you do with it on Shabbos? Typically, you would burn it the next day being Shabbos, are you allowed to do that? Conversely, if Yom Kippur falls on a Sunday and you have the Shabbos Karbanos, where you have the leftover Karbanos that normally are burnt on Motzei Shabbos, what if you do that Motzei Shabbos Yom Kippur? And again, we'll discuss more details about what exactly the issues are that they're debating when we do tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, however, just in terms of a calendar discussion, a very brief calendar discussion, in our calendars as constructed and as set in motion by Hillel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, some 1,700 years ago, so we of course know that one of the principal rules when he constructed the calendar is Lo Adu Rosh, that Rosh Hashanah cannot fall out neither on a Sunday or a Wednesday or a Friday. Now, the reason why, I'm not going to explain all three of them, but for two of them, the reason why is because if Rosh Hashanah would fall out on two of those 3 days, that means Yom Kippur would fall out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. If you have a calendar in front of you, you could just simply look at a calendar and see how that works out, but it works out. And that means to say that the Chachamim did not want Yom Kippur to fall out on a Friday or on a Sunday, so they manipulated the calendar. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. Just simply, they orchestrated, that's a better way to say it, they orchestrated the calendar so that it would always be that Rosh Hashanah would fall out either on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Thursday or a Shabbos, but lo adu, not Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. And again, I'm only explaining two of those days. I'm not explaining the third day. I'll explain that on another occasion. In the meantime, however, so that seems to be going against our Mishnah, because our Mishnah over here is clearly entertaining the possibility. I'm one step ahead of myself. Why? Why do the Chachamim not want Yom Kippur to fall out on a Friday or on a Sunday? So the reason being is because we know that if somebody dies on a Shabbos, so the burial cannot occur on Shabbos, but the burial will be postponed until Sunday. Right? The Kvura, the burial, does not override the Shabbos. What about Yontif? So the Gemara in Beitza tells us that under certain circumstances, under certain conditions, you can bury on Yontif. Yontif Sheni Shogalios, the Gemara over there, is very makel, and even on Yontif Rishon, so you can ask a non-Jew to bury. So there is a possibility for burial to be done on Yontif. What about Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur has the same status as Shabbos. And so that means to say that on Yom Kippur, you cannot do burial as well. So if Yom Kippur and Shabbos came out back to back, what would happen then be is that you'd have a 48-hour period in which somebody would not be buried. Without refrigeration, which is how it was back in the day, and for most of world history. So without refrigeration, so 48 hours without burial will lead already to serious decomposition. And so the Chachamim with that challenge said, let's not even get into that issue, let's not get into that problem. And so therefore, the way to avoid the problem is just simply never having Yom Kippur fall out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. And so that's why Yom Kippur, the calendar is orchestrated so that Yom Kippur will not fall out on a Friday or a Sunday. With all that stated, that is a bit of a lengthy introduction. So then, of course, yeah, look at our Mishnah, and you wonder, how does our Mishnah work? Our Mishnah over here is clearly entertaining the idea that Yom Kippur can fall out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. In fact, our Mishnah is dealing with the question of what happens when Yom Kippur falls out on a Friday or on a Sunday, and what do you do in terms of the Karbanos? What do you do in terms of issues of Hachana? And our Mishnah is clearly entertaining it. Now, the easiest thing you could say is, well, our Mishnah is talking about before the calendar was set in the motion. And before the calendar was set in the motion, so you didn't have these rules in which governed which day Rosh Hashanah is necessarily going to fall out on, or which day is it not going to fall out on. So that is an easy way to say it. On the other hand, we also understand why the Chachamim orchestrated that the Rosh Hashanah should not fall out on a Friday and Sunday. And that concern of not having a 48-hour period where you're not going to bury, that's as much of a concern before the calendar was set as it was after the calendar was set. So it is a little bit challenging to understand that before the calendar was set, so Rosh Hashanah fell on a Friday or on a Sunday, and why didn't the Chachamim manipulate the calendar, orchestrate the calendar, even before the calendar was set? So some of the larger issues in which we're discussing, but to put all of it really succinctly, from the Mishnah standpoint, and this is not the only Mishnah, there are other Mishnahs as well, it is a real possibility that Yom Kippur can fall out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. We start with the Gemara. Amr debei Rav Yana loshanu ela b'adam echad. We're on the topic of folding. And we said that folding is okay on Shabbos, permissible on Shabbos, provided that you plan on using the clothing again over the course of Shabbos. Now, as I mentioned, the Mishnah's issue is only an issue of Hachana. The Gemara now is going to be focused on the issue of Tikkun, on the idea that folding is, in fact, going to improve the clothing. And so, therefore, the Gemara takes the following into consideration. And let me read the Gemara again. I'm going to restart the Gemara. Amri de Rav Yana l'shanu ela be'adam echad. That's only when one person's folding. About b'shnei b'nei adam. But if two people are folding, lo. So then you can't do that because two people folding are going to make a significant improvement in the clothing. And one is violating the malacha of tikkun. You are absolutely improving clothing. Uva adam echad nami lo aman ela b'chadashim v'abishanim lo. And the allowance in the Mishnah to fold the clothing is only if it's new clothing, but if it's old clothing, so then folding it is going to make a significant improvement in the clothing. And once again, that's the tikkun, and that you cannot do. Continuing the Gemara, v'chadash nami lo amar ela b'levanim. And that's only true when it's white clothing that it's allowed. Avav b'tzivonim lo. Colored clothing, again, this is something that I'm not going to be able to explain well, but for colored clothing, again, if folding it is going to make it seriously significantly improved, and therefore it is going to be a tikkun that you cannot do. V'lo amar ela she'en lo lahachlif. And that's only if you have no other clothing to change into. Avayesh lahachlif lo. So then, if you have other clothing to change into, so then you don't fold the clothing over here, because better to leave it unfolded. And if you want to change on Shabbos, just put on another set of clothing, provided that you have it. Tana, we learned in a brayso, shel beis Rabbi Gamliel, lo hayim mekaplin kli lavan shelahem. They would not fold their white clothing. Mimishayem lahachlif, because they had other clothing to fold into. Okay, so when all said and done, so the Gemara significantly limits the ability to fold. Meaning, again, just to quickly reiterate, from the Mishnah standpoint, one is allowed to fold clothing on Shabbos, provided they're going to use it again that Shabbos, meaning our Mishnah was only concerned with Hachana. Now, from the Gemara standpoint, there's the issue of Tikkun, and with the Gemara's many limitations, the only time that one would be allowed to fold clothing on Shabbos would be only under the circumstance where A, well, I'm not going to say call this A because this is a Mishnah. You plan on wearing it again on Shabbos. But after that, is already, assuming that that's the case, number one, it can only be done by one person, not two people. Two people is by definition going to make a significant improvement. It has to be new clothing, not old clothing. It has to be white, not colored. And it has to be under the circumstance where you have nothing else to wear. So admittedly, after going through the Gemara, the allowance to fold clothing is going to be significantly limited. Minig is after a man takes off his talis after Shacharis, so he does not fold his talis on the folds, and that, of course, is based on our Mishnah and on the Gemara that we just learned, that folding creates a tikkun, and so therefore the minig is not to fold it. Some fold it on a different crease, or where there is no crease, and then refold it again after Shabbos. There is some who give heterim in terms of folding it on Shabbos itself. Anyway, a discussion off the daf, but certainly something to be aware of and sensitive based on the Gemara that we just learned. The Gemara now is going to use this as a wonderful opportunity to discuss in general dressing on Shabbos. And so the Gemara over here is going to launch into a wonderful tangent regarding the necessity to dress special for Shabbos. As a brief introduction to the Gemara that we're about to start over here, we know that there are two mitzvahs d'oraisa when it comes to Shabbos. One is Shamar, the other is Zachor. As the mitzvah of Shabbos is presented twice in the Aseres HaDibros, so once it says Zachor and the other Shamor, Zachor the positive, Shamor the negative, we both have to do the positive aspects of Shabbos, Kiddush, Abdallah. The negative aspects of Shabbos, meaning be Shomer Shabbos, make sure that we don't violate any of the malachas. In addition to that, the Nevi'im also add two other dimensions to Shabbos, and that's Kavod and Oneg, the honoring of Shabbos and the enjoying of Shabbos. And so we are really primarily focused right now on Kavod HaShabbos, on the honor that we have to have with Shabbos. Oneg, so that's the eating and the sleeping and the general enjoyment of Shabbos. But the Kavod, the honor of Shabbos, so that's really what we're focusing on over here in these upcoming Gemaras. Amar Rav Huna, Yemieshel Lahachlif Yachlif. If person has other clothing to wear for Shabbos, otherwise known as Shabbos clothing. So if you have Shabbos clothing to wear, so then you should change into your Shabbos clothing. V'im ein lo lahachlif, yishal shal begadav. But if you have no other clothing to wear, so then what you can do is you can let your clothing down. Now what the Gemara is making reference to over here is that back in the day, when you're talking about an ani, obviously he has no other clothing to change for Shabbos, so they wore these robes that went down to the floor. And so as to make sure that, being that this was his only article of clothing, so he would hitch up the bottom so it wouldn't drag on the floor, so it would last longer. On Shabbos, in order to mark that he's wearing this clothing special for Shabbos, and unfortunately for him, he has no other clothing to wear, so what he's going to do is he's just simply going to let it go down to the floor now, and that's how he'll note that this is being worn specifically for Shabbos. Maskal Rav Safra Vaham is Chazik Haramos Rucha. Now, Rav Safra says, isn't there like a concern of arrogance over here? He's wearing it in this manner? The Gemara says, no. Kevin Dechol Yuma Lo Ka'avid Va'ayin Nahu Deka'avid Lo Mischazik Haramos Rucha. The Gemara says, no, he's not doing this every day. He's doing it specifically for Shabbos. It's understood that he's wearing it in this manner as a way of signaling Kavod Shabbos. The Gemara now quotes the Pasuk from Yishayahu. This is the Navi teaching us that Shabbos is a day of Kavod. V'chibaratom me'asos terechecha. The Gemara is going to be spelling out for us that Kavod comes in a number of different ways. One is that the dress that you dress for Shabbos, it should not be the same way you dress during the week. Rav Yochanan, when describing his clothing, he would call it those that honor me. That which gives dignity to a person is the clothing that he wears. As the expression in English goes, clothing makes the man. So the Gemara over here says that it is a way of honoring the Shabbos in that you're wearing clothing specific and special for Shabbos. Continuing, Ma'asos Terechecha, the Pasuk, the Navi goes on to say, and you have to make sure that the way you walk on Shabbos is going to be different. The way you walk on Shabbos has to be different than during the week. The Gemara in just a moment is going to ask the question, how exactly does that work out? How do you walk special on Shabbos? Mimso chavsecha, this is back to the Pasuk in the Navi. Chavsecha asurim, chavse shamayim mutarim. Your activities are going to be prohibited, but chavse shamayim are going to be permitted. What does that mean, your activities? If you take a look at Rashi over here on the bottom of the Amud, mimso chavsecha. Rashi says, ke yahud amrin be'erivin, quoting the Gemara in Erivin, lo yitayel adam. L'sof sadeo, a person cannot walk to the end of his field, but Shabbos. Meaning, as we're approaching the end of Shabbos, so he figures he's going to get a bit of a jump on his properties and on his businesses. And so what he'll do is he'll walk to the end of the field. Leida mahitzricha acher Shabbos. So that immediately after Shabbos, so he can tend to it. So this is going to be a violation of mimtzoh chavsecha. He's not violating any isurim of the Torah. He's not violating any of the malachas of Shabbos. He's not going beyond tchum. This is with a property that is proximate to where he is right now. And he's not doing anything per se that is a violation of Shabbos from a malacha standpoint. So he's not violating Shamor, but it's a lack of kavod. And that's what the Navi says, that you have to mimso chavsecha, you cannot take care of your business matters, even in a non-malacha manner. Chavse shamayim mutarim, what does that mean, chavse shamayim? Again, we go back to Rashi, last Rashi on the Amud. Kigon poskin staka. Umishadchem al hatinokos le'areis. So giving staka, establishing how much each one of the mechutanim are going to be providing for the new chasen and kala. So these are chavsei shemayim, these are mitzvos, and that one can organize and orchestrate on Shabbos. Dabir davar, back to the Navi. Last two words of the Amud. So the Navi Yeshayahu talks about how Shabbos, your speech has to be different. And as we turn to the Amud Bey, is shelo yehei dibercha shel Shabbos kedibercha shel chol. The way you speak on Shabbos should not be the same way you speak during the week. Rashi says you shouldn't be talking business on Shabbos. Mekach u'memkar, cheshbonos, business and accounting, things that should not be discussed on Shabbos because it's a lack of kavod for Shabbos. Dibur asr v'hir her mutter. Now speaking about these activities are going to be asr, but thinking about these activities, says the Gemara, would be mutter. The Gemara says, now I understand all the examples that were given and how we basically broke down the pasuk in Yeshayahu going over all the various activities that one should make specific and special for Shabbos. However, one of them is difficult to understand. What does that mean, that your walking on Shabbos needs to be different? So the Gemara attempts to give an explanation. So you're walking on Shabbos and you come to a stream of water. So the Gemara says, well, let's say that you can walk over the stream without having to jump, putting your front foot down before lifting up your back foot, otherwise known as taking a wide pace. So if you could do that, fine, but if you have to jump the stream, you can't do that on Shabbos. That would require you to do an activity which is not Shabbos dik, which is not Bechavad Shabbos, and that would be to leap over the stream. So the Gemara says, Maskav Rava Hechile Aved. So the Gemara says, okay, so what's the alternative suggestion? Lekav Kamafish Bihilucha. Well, if you can't jump over the stream, and now you're forced to walk around it, that's going to increase the number of steps. So yes, you've gained in that you didn't jump. On the other hand, it's going to force you now to walk the circuitous route, which is going to take you a lot longer to walk and involve many more steps. And the Gemara says, so fine, so you missed a leap on Shabbos, you were able to save yourself a leap, but in doing so, you've gained many more steps. And so the Gemara says, it kind of offsets. And le'avra zimnan dimisfasen. So the Gemara says, okay, so walk through the stream. So the Gemara says, walking through the stream, though, is also not much of a gain, because now your clothing are going to get wet, they're going to get soaked. Le'dimisfasen mane maya. Your clothing is going to be soaked with water. Vasilu de schita, you may come to squeeze the clothing, and that would be a violation of schita on Shabbos. So Allah, so the Gemara says, okay. So basically, although we tried to give an explanation of how your walking is going to be different in the example of the stream, the Gemara concedes the point that when it comes to the stream, you're going to be jumping over the stream. There's just no simple, there's no better alternatives. So the Gemara is now still looking for an example of how walking on Shabbos is going to be different. So the Gemara says it's going to be, it'll be just fine to just simply leap over the stream. So is a person allowed to take long strides on Shabbos? To which the Gemara responds, what do you mean? You're not allowed to take long strides during the week. Taking long strides diminishes eyesight. The relationship between taking long strides and the diminishment of eyesight, certainly difficult to explain, but the long strides have to do with gasus haruach. It has to do with arrogance and haughtiness. So the Gemara says that really it's a character flaw, and it's something that you're not allowed to do during the entire week. So this is not something special and unique to Shabbos. And oh, by the way, how do you deal with the fact that your eyesight is diminished? Mahadalei b'kedusha de be'shimsha. By drinking the wine from the Kiddush on Friday night, so it does restore that eyesight that you lost because of the long strides you took. And again, I'd love to explain that a little bit better. Right now, just simply do not have the vocabulary to explain that any better. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara is looking for how the walking on Shabbos should be different than walking during the week. And oddly, the Gemara gave a couple of suggestions, but the Gemara admitted in both suggestions there's nothing special about the walking on Shabbos than we have for the week, meaning the Gemara simply has not found a case in which the walking on Shabbos should be different than the week. In the case of leaping over the stream, the Gemara acknowledged that you're going to leap over the stream because there is no there's no better alternative. In terms of taking long strides, that's something that's not specific to Shabbos, that would be true the week round, the full week, that you're not allowed to take long strides. So the Gemara has acknowledged that we really haven't isolated an example of how walking on Shabbos should be different than walking during the week. Can a person eat ground on Shabbos? Now, as we've noted already numerous times when it comes to the therapies and the remedies that are offered in the Gemara, so first of all, we are banned from trying any of these therapies and remedies, and they, to us, seem a little bit strange because, obviously, these are therapies and remedies that we no longer use. So back in the day, eating a certain amount of dirt and a certain kind of dirt was viewed as therapeutic. And the Gemara wants to know, is this therapy allowed on Shabbos? Rashi describes over here, Ma lechol adama, after giving an old French word to describe it, Mi gazruba mishum schika samanan kashar refuah lo. So do the Chachamim give this the ban of refuah? And maybe, just maybe, the question over here is that we're talking about something that's not really something that gets crushed up, meaning we're not talking about herbs and roots, we're talking about just eating ground, and maybe there shouldn't be an issue, assuming that it has any kind of therapeutic benefit, but it's not the kind of thing which is really ground down, and so therefore it may not fall under the gzera of refuah. That is the Gemara's consideration. To which the Gemara's response is, Amalei v'chi b'chol mihutra? What do you mean? You're not even to take it during the week. Shani omer, af b'chol asr. It's prohibited to do it during the week. There is no benefit to him. Mineshu malake. It doesn't help you, it just hurts you. And so what the Gemara seems to be debating over here is whether or not there's any benefit whatsoever to the consumption of earth. Amar Rabbi Amikol ocha me'afra shel bavo ki'ilo ocha mi'basar avosav. Anyone who eats from the dirt of Bavel is eating decomposed flesh. Obviously, a really harsh way to say it, but the Gemara's assumption over here is that all those that died during the Mehamabul, so they all drained into the area of Bavel. The Gemara expresses this in a number of different ways. V'yesharmim ki'ilo ochel shkatsim v'ramasim. Now, in another version, yu'ishkatsim v'ramasim dechsiv v'yemachiz kol ayikum, that all of life perished in that area. Now the area of Bava also goes by the name of Shinar. The Gemara wants to explain why that should be. She called Mese Mabul Nin Aru Lusham, because all who die in the Mabul end up draining in that area. And again, another way to describe Bava is Mitzula. The word Mitzula means low. She called Mese Mabul Nitzdalalu Lusham. It all drained into that area because it's a very low-lying area. Now, according to the Yeshomim of the Braisa, eating dirt from that area is going to be like eating the bugs. Va'avadi is machuyas machu. Even if they did perish during the Mabul, but basically, aren't we looking at a full disintegration? So Amri came to Malke Gazra Be'Rabbanan. The Gemara says no, because eating the ground is really harmful for an individual. The Chachamim Elikzera. Da'ahu Gavra Da'achal Gargishta. The person ate red clay. Va'achal Tachle, and afterwards he ate watercress. The Kadachule Tachle Belibe. And what happened was that the watercress took root in his stomach, and it started penetrating into the other organs. It ended up hitting his heart, umate, and the person died. So basically, it's such a harmful activity to go ahead and eat dirt, and so therefore the Gemara says it's like you're eating shkatsim v'ramasim. That's the rabbinic ban in terms of eating it. We go back to the topic of special clothing to wear for Shabbos and the idea of Kavod HaShabbos. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Megillas Rus, V'rachatza v'sachta v'samta simlo sayach. So instructions that Naomi gives to Ruth when she goes down to visit Boaz is that she's going to bathe herself, she's going to anoint herself, then she's going to put on special clothing. Amar Rav Elazar Elu B'gadam Shel Shabbos. This is a reference to Big Day Shabbos that she wore. Just as an interesting thought, just thinking out loud right now, the idea that she's wearing Big Day Shabbos, does that mean that they met on Shabbos, that she went down there on Shabbos? Or the other possibility is that it was obviously a special occasion. She's presenting herself to Boaz as a potential candidate for marriage, and so therefore she wore Big Day Shabbos. It may speak to the question of, if let's say you are going to a very special chasna, you're going on a date, whatever, you have it's a special moment, so are you allowed to wear Big Day Shabbos for that special moment? So presumably the answer is no, because the Big Day Shabbos has to be designated for Shabbos. That's really the thrust of today's Gemara. On the other hand, it says very clearly over here that Rus wore Big Day Shabbos, unless you assume that we're talking about because it's Shabbos. Okay. Ten lechacham v'achkem od. The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei that if you tell a smart person some advice, so not only will he listen to the advice, but he knows how to be machkem. He'll improve on the advice as well. The Gemara gives two examples of that. Amr Rebbe Elazar, Zurusa Ma'aviyah Shmuel Ramasim. The two examples is Rus and Shmuel, and we're going to go through both examples in terms of how not only did they listen to the advice, but they actually improved the advice. Rus the Ilu Nami Kamrat La Rechatsa Vesach Vesamta Simlasayach Alayach Vayaradit Hagorin. So, in terms of the instructions that Naomi gives to Rus, so the idea that she's going to first bathe, then anoint, and then put on clothing, and then go down. Now, what did she do? Be'ilu b'didak siv, it actually writes in terms of what she did. Vatered hagaren, v'hadar v'tas kachol, asher tzivsah hamosah. She first goes down to the granary, and then she does all the instructions. So she does not go walk down there all dressed up. And Rashi over here says it's because that she would have attracted attention to herself if she did so. Okay. So she took the advice that was given to her by Naomi, and she even improved it. Another example, this is Shmuel. Shmuel de'ilu eili kamarle now. Shmuel was hearing prophetic visions from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, prophetic messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shmuel at this point in time was not skilled in the arts of Nevuah. Shmuel did not understand that he was having Nevuah, and he went to Eli and he asked him what exactly should he be doing. And this is Eli's advice to him. So Eli says, okay, so when you hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to you, so you say, Daber Hashem. Now, ve'ilu b'didei, now when we go back to the Navi and we see what exactly Shmuel did, so, k'siv, be'i, v'yavo Hashem, v'yisasem, v'yikra, b'pam, b'pam, Shmuel, v'yomer Shmuel, daber, ki shomei abdecha. So he said, speak because your servant is listening. So you'll know carefully that he more or less follows what Eli told him to do, with notable exception that he didn't say daber Hashem. And the instructions that were given to him, the advice that was given to him, is to say daber Hashem. V'lo amar daber Hashem. So that's not what he said. And the Gemara goes on to explain. The Gemara does not explain. Sorry. Rashi explains that why this is, that what Shmuel did is took the advice and improved it, is because Shmuel, at that point in time, wasn't sure that it was the Kadosh Baruch Hu speaking to him. So he didn't want to say Daber Hashem, because if he were wrong, so he would be suffering the embarrassment. So he just simply said Daber, and if it was Hashem speaking, fine. And if it wasn't, so he covered himself as well. So that is the extra chachma that Shmuel had over the advice that was given to him by Eli. We're now going to go back to Rus, and we're going to be darshaning a number of the psukim regarding Rus, and specifically her encounter with Boaz. We're backing up a little bit here into the second parak. So she goes, and she comes, and she ends up collecting in the field of Boaz. But the verbs over here are multiple, and the Gemara wants to try to make sense. Vatelech vatavo. She went, she came back. What does that mean? So Amar Abelazar shahachol vas hachol vas ad shemasa b'nei Adam muhaganim leilech imahem. So this is not the first field that she went to. In fact, she went to many different people's fields, and this is the first field she felt was truly an appropriate field where she belonged. And that is the sense of vatelech vatavo. Back and forth, until she found a field where she felt comfortable. And when Boaz notices her, so immediately he turns to one of his workers and he says, who is this girl? And the Gemara says, now Boaz was a shofate, and it's not appropriate that he's asking about who this girl is. So the Gemara notes that what Boaz noticed is something unusual about Rus. A couple of things. One, she was a chachama. Shnei shibalim lakta, shlosha shibalim ina lakta. The halacha by leket is that if any of the sheaves are left over, you can pick it up, but only if two, not three. She knew the halacha. Number two, by masisa tana daver sneos ra'aba. He noticed something tsanua about her. Omedes mu'umad noflos miyushav. That when she was taking the shechacha, shechacha is the forgotten sheaves. So if it was taken in its standing form, she would stand in order to take it. If the sheaves, however, were forgotten in its form in which they were on the ground, and that meant that she had to bend down on the ground, she didn't bend over in order to pick it up, but Yosheb, she sat down, so that way she would not put herself in a compromised position of having to bend over and be in a immodest state. Continuing, V'chosid b'kun im na'arosai im na'arosai. Boaz's instructions to Naomi is that you're going to cling with my people. V'chidarko shel Boaz l'dabek im anashim. Now the Gemara over here seems to be bothered by the verb that's used by Boaz, l'dabek. L'dabek means to cling, but it has an intimate connotation to it. And again, the Gemara is wondering, how can Boaz use wording that intimates intimacy? Amar avalazah kem dechazav tishak arpa l'chamosav rus dafkaba. So the Gemara says that we know that the same verb was used when Rus ended up clinging with her mother-in-law back at the end of the first parak of Megillas Rus. So you see that it says Dafka Ba over there. Amar, so Boaz says to himself, Shari Le'idbuke Ba. So it's permitted for me to be medavik to her, because that's how much he clung to Yiddishkeit. And so therefore, he feels that he himself is going to be connected, closely connected with her. And Boaz says, at the time of eating, Goshi Alom, and the Gemara here says, Amar Rav Elazar, Remez Ramazla, Atida Machus Beis David, Latzeis Mimech. That he was alluding to her through Nevuah, that Beis David is going to be coming out through her. Dichsiv Be Halom, it says Halom in the Pasuk we just read, and Shenemar, and it also says so in regards to David HaMelech. The Pasuk says, Vayavo HaMelech David, Vayashiv Lifnei Hashem, Vayomer, Mianochi Hashem, Hashem umi beisi keviasani ad halom. David HaMelech was amazed that he was the one who was going to be assigned as being the Melech, and he uses the same terminology of halom. So you see that this was the nevuah that Boaz was communicating to Rus. Finally, v'tavalt pitech b'chometz, and she dipped her bread into vinegar. Amar Rav Elazar, mikan she'chometz yafel l'sheref. Why is this important information for us to know? Why does the Navi have to tell us that she dipped her bread in vinegar? A seemingly an unimportant detail, but the Gemara says a couple of things. One, just some practical life advice, that vinegar is very good for a hot day. And two, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmini Amar Remez Remez La Atid Ba Ben Latzis Mimcha Shemasav Kashim Kechomets. Also, more nevuah that's going to that she was given there at the meal. And that is that one of her future progeny is going to be difficult like vinegar. Umanu Menashe, and that's a reference to Menashe. Now, obviously, it only begs the question, why does she need to know this information? And obviously, it's not positive information. It's extraordinarily negative. Menashe was a terrible king. In fact, Chizkiyahu did not want to have children because he knew, via Nevuah, that one of his children is, in fact, going to be Menashe. So why did Ruth need to hear this information at this point in time? It's such a simple question, although I don't really have a good answer. Back, Vateshe Mitzada Kotzrim, and she sat by the side of the harvesters. Amar Rav Elazar, Mitzada Kotzrim Velo Betocha Kotzrim, she sat at one end of the table. And that means to say that Boaz and Ruth were sitting down at the table, they sat at different ends of the table. And again, more Nevuah, which Boaz was trying to communicate to Ruth. And the Gemara over here elaborates. Remez Remez Lasha Atida Machus Beidavish Tis Chalek. Then eventually the monarchy is going to be divided. After David HaMelech, after Shlomo HaMelech, the next generation, Rechavam, took the southern portion of Eretz Yisrael, but Yeravam and Nevat took the northern portion. Vayitzbot lo kalev v'tochal. Now he gave it roasted kernels, and she ate it. Amar Rav Elazar v'tochal b'mei David. The verbs over here, the Gemara now is going to assign. That v'tochal is a reference to Yimei David, and tizba b'yimei Shlomo, v'tosar b'yimei Chizkiyahu. Three great malachim that are direct lines, direct progeny, coming from Rus, and that is the good that is coming out of her. Igid Amri v'tochal b'yimei David v'yimei Shlomo. V'tochal is a reference to David and Shlomo, giving them both, assigning them both to the tochal. V'tizba, and that she satiated b'mei Chizkiyahu, v'tarsar b'mei Rebbe. And the additional, the leftover, was during Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. Also from the Davidic line. Damar mar, aharure de Rebbe, have asir mishmor malka. The attendants of the horses of Rebbe were wealthier than that of Shmor Malka. So Rebbe really also had not only the royalty, but the royal wealth as well. The Masisa Tana and Abraisa, we learn about Tochab al-Mazeh, that she's going to end this world, but tisbali imos Mashiach, and she'll be satiated in the times of Mashiach, but tosar la sidlavo, and left over for the world to come as well. So again, another way of just simply understanding the multiple verbs in that pasuk and how to assign it to not different maluchas, but different periods of history. This world, imos Mashiach, olam haba. Another proof, by the way, parenthetically, that imos Mashiach and olam haba are two different stages and not just simply one stage. Okay, this is a great opportunity to review the daf. We saw in the beginning of the daf today the idea of tying the bucket in order to send the bucket down the well in order to collect some water. How can you do so? Tanakhama of our Mishnah says you could do so by tying it with a belt or with a girdle, but you can't use a rope. Rabbi Yehuda allows for the rope. The Gemara goes and discusses exactly what they're debating. vis-a-vis the general rule of Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah. Anytime the rope that you're tying, anytime the knot that you're tying is not permanent, so then one is not going to be violating the Isser of kosher, the Malacha of kosher. And briefly we discussed exactly what was he commenting on. And the simplest suggestion is that he was going against the position of Rav Meir that was in the beginning of our perek. The Gemara's first discussion today was just simply trying to understand the parameters of the debate between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda and the Mishnah. The Gemara talked about a feed bag and whether or not one is allowed to tie the feed bag to the horse on Shabbos. The Rav says that you're allowed to. The Brisa says that you are allowed to, but only under limited circumstances. The Gemara tried to make peace between Rav and the Brisa. We discussed a couple of muksa issues on the Amud Aleph. Since we were discussing the weaver's rope, we also went on to discuss the equipment of the weaver. Is it muksa? The way Rashi describes it, is it a kli shemalachta l'isser? So some Amorim said it is not a kli shemalachta l'isser. And then the Gemara concluded that, at least according to Rav Yehuda Bar Levi, when asked a question from Rav Yochanan, his answer was it is a kli shemalachta l'isser. We talked about the folding of clothing. One is allowed to fold clothing on Shabbos, but only if one plans on using it again for that Shabbos. Our Mishnah is focused on Hachana. And the same thing is true with making your bed. You can only make your bed on Shabbos if you plan on using it for that Shabbos. And then the Mishnah went on to describe the Karbanos on Shabbos and whether or not you can burn those Chalavim on Yom Kippur, vice versa, which we're going to speak more about in tomorrow's Daf. Anyway, the Mishnah was only focused on the Hachana issue. The Gemara is focused on the Tikkun issue. Folding is going to make an improvement in the clothing, and you're not allowed to be misaking. You cannot improve the clothing on Shabbos. So the Gemara described that the only time that folding is allowed is only under very limited circumstances where it doesn't make an improvement, but if the clothing is old, if the clothing is colored, if it's folded by two people, so under those circumstances you're making a significant improvement in the clothing, and therefore it's going to be usur. The Gemara spoke about Kavod Shabbos, honoring Shabbos. Honoring Shabbos, you have to wear clothing that's special and unique to Shabbos. And on the Amud Aleph, on the bottom, the Gemara launched into a discussion of the various ways that a person is mechabed Shabbos, he honors Shabbos by making it special. In the way that a person dresses, in the way that a person walks, talks, engages, and thinks about business, meaning the prohibition of talking about business or engaging in business. Here, who are thinking about business would be mutter. On the Amud Beis of today, the Gemara talks about how exactly should your walking on Shabbos be different during the week. The Gemara really struggled to give a good example of how walking on Shabbos should be different than during the week. Eating earth on Shabbos came up on the Amud Beis. The Gemara discussed it because it was the remedy, and even in the Gemara, the Amoraim debated whether or not this had any kind of therapeutic benefit to it or not. The Gemara finally concluded that based on the Psukim and Rus, that she wore Bikkei Shabbos when she went to go visit Boaz, and then it launched into a number of drashas based on the Psukim in terms of the advice that was given to her by Naomi, how Rus was able to take the advice and not only take it but improve the advice, and other psukim that were darshaned over the course of the Amud Beis.